Hey, good morning.
Is it Josh?
Yeah.
Hey, you back
how
in
you doing?
Back in Indiana?
Morning. Hello.
Yeah.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There last weekend, so.
All right. Hey, good morning, Ripka.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Good to see
you. Okay.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Doug. Good morning, Cal.
Good morning.
Okay, so let's start. we're up to, okay, we're still in chapter 5, up to verse 16. Yeah, we talked a bit about, past few weeks, about the pitfalls of making windfalls. So where wealth can actually... the benefits can escape a person greatly. We talked about how last week, in the previous verses, how a person comes to the world naked and he leaves the world naked. So where's the benefit? And everything and all the work that he's doing. And King Solomon had rejected that value. The person feels bad about that, because it's foolish to feel bad about that. And that's why we said, he didn't say the words under the sun when he talked about the principle. When he talked about the event of a rich man having money and then it's lost. So those are events that take place on earth. So therefore it makes sense to be called under the sun. Under the sun always means about earthly events. When he does not say the words under the sun, therefore he's not talking about an event. So when he says in verse 15, he talks a second time about an evil sickness. There he doesn't say it's under the sun, because there he's talking about the value, the corrupt value that the person has. So you can't talk about a value as being under the sun, because it's not an event that takes place on earth. All right, should we point that? I thought that was an important observation that we made. And he says, what is that value? Is that just as a person comes, he also leaves the world. And therefore, where's the benefit in all his work? That he worked for nothing. Okay. Give me one second. Right, so that view is wrong. I mean, the person to feel bad about that, that he comes naked, he leaves naked, and then to ask the question, where's the benefit? So you see that the person's still working. See, this is a critique. The person's still working in terms of what does he have to show for everything. He's still looking in monetary terms. Right? That's why he's talking about as being evil, because he's verbalizing the thoughts of people. The false thoughts of people is what he's verbalizing. Okay, this is just people who just joined us online. Just let me know that you're picking up the audio, because we started the class. So just let me know that you're picking up the sound, okay? Just type audio okay at the bottom of the screen there. Okay, so I just want to make it clear that is a critique. That's what he says in the beginning of 15. This is also an evil sickness. And what is a sickness? This very sentiment that a person comes naked and he leaves naked. He comes to the world naked and he leaves, and he doesn't take anything with him. If a person has the correct value system, he does not look at that as being a negative, because he recognizes it can't be otherwise. Okay. Is that clear? Everybody has that?
Yep.
Okay.
Rabbi, if he's talking about truth, then why is he calling it a grievous evil?
That's
the way it is.
No, he's talking about the value of people, that they feel bad about it. When a person says, what benefit is there that he works for the wind? That's the evil. The evil is that the person has this type of value system.
Okay.
when I tell you that I come to the world with nothing and I'm leaving nothing, where's all the benefit, all the work? So you would critique me for having that type of a remorse. Why are you feeling remorse about something like that? That's a wrong type of an attitude. Okay. Then it goes on at 16, and he says, just give me one more second, so I'm going to have something clear here. I mean, you could also take it in straight, just straight reading this verse 15. And that he's critiquing people that are trying to make the money, meaning that if a person comes to the world with nothing and he leaves with nothing, so what benefit is there that he works for the wind, meaning he's not taking anything with him?
What? Rabbi, can I ask a question on this?
Yes.
So I'm confused. If we're saying this is what the world says,
right.
If Solomon is saying, okay, this is, the world's point of view that it's a grievous evil, and I'm reading in 15, that just as it came, so shall it go, and what advantage do I have for all my former to win? I think my argument would be that, well, I don't think we see that people ask that question. People just, it would take someone of a reasonable philosophical honesty, I think, to ask that question, but people just keep working for fantasies.
Right. So
I'm having trouble accepting that Solomon is saying this is a question that your average person asks, when at least I think in this era, that's not a question that I see that people ask.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Which question are you talking about?
The one in 15.
Well, explain it to me in English, what your understanding is of it, just so I have your question clear.
Okay, so it sounds like that the verse is saying that people say, yeah, this is a very great evil that I come with nothing and I leave with nothing.
No, the way I'm...
Why am I bothering you to do all this work? Am I misunderstanding?
Well, the way I'm understanding it is different than you. I'm saying that this is a great evil sickness, or King Solomon's words. And then he quotes what the people say. That's how I was explaining it, meaning this also I have seen as being a sick evil. That's his quote. That's King Solomon speaking. And now he's going to verbalize the sentiment of the people. Now, what's the sentiment of the people? The sentiment of the people starts off by saying, just as one comes to the world, so also they leave, and therefore what benefit is there in all the work that I worked for the wind?
Oh, okay, and I'm with you so far. Then my question on that approach is, do we actually see that people ask that question?
I think that you see people at the end of their life, they do start becoming very, depressed, because they start realizing the reality.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that it comes at the end of life. I don't see too many people asking that question partway through.
No, people are blinded by the immortality.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so I'm just saying that there could be two ways to understand the verse, meaning he's just talking about, if you just read it plain, the simple meaning, he's saying, what is this evil? Is that the people come and go with nothing in their hands, so what are they toiling so much for? I mean, it's an open rejection of, trying to make more than you can really spend. All right, so that is his own critique, meaning the entire verse are the words of King Solomon. Or you could say, as I suggested last week, that the evil is the sentiment. He's not talking about the happenstances that people come and go with nothing in their hands, and therefore it's his own, you know, observation, you know, that this is very simple. What are you toiling so much for? You're not spending any. You know, you use 1% of what you work for. So that's just a plain reading of the verse, which makes sense. But it could also make sense in terms of him quoting the sentiment of people, where they feel bad about not being able to take anything with them. And that's a sickness. Now, the truth is, it's really the same phenomenon. It's just whose words are you quoting? Are you quoting the critique? Are you saying that King Solomon is saying, it's a critique on people. But why is it a critique? Because people have this value system where they are working so hard and then they feel bad about not taking anything. All right, look it over. We'll look it over. Okay, so let's go further. Now we saw something now in 16, and he says, also, all his days he eats in darkness with anger, much anger and sickness and cuts up. How does he have the English for the last word in that, Doug?
Sickness and wrath.
Wrath. He's infuriated. Okay. So now, what is he saying? The first word of this verse is interesting. He says, also. What's the also going on? Also, all his days. He's talking about this person who has so much money. So now, what's the addition? What is he now adding? What is he also? Also, all his days, he eats in darkness with great anger and sickness and with wrath. See, if you look at the context, he rejects the fact that a person has so much money. He talks about in 12 that there's an evil that he sees under the sun, and that the wealthy person is guarding his money, but for an eventuate an evil that's going to meet up with him, and he loses all the money. Also means on earth. Very good. So he's showing you the full spectrum over here in terms of this type of a lifestyle where a person's just putting away the money and he's hoarding it. And he doesn't take it with him, and also here he doesn't enjoy it. That's what he means. All his days are, what does it mean in darkness? So there's two views of what the commentary say on darkness. Ibn Ezra says the darkness means that he doesn't eat until nighttime because he's so involved in making his money, to gather money, he says. He says, on the day when it's light, he does not eat, except for at nighttime. That's when he eats. And what does the matter mean? Because of his great indulgence and his labor, his toil, to gather money, he does not eat until it comes nighttime. And then he's full of anger and sickness of the soul. And this is the fear that he has. And what's the anger? What's the sickness? We understand the physical sickness is a problem because he's neglecting himself physically. So that's one thing. And what's the anger?
Does he become bitter because there's no enjoyment that he's deriving from this? He's kind of a slave to this lifestyle.
That could be very true, yes, that he's not really indulging in it at all. He's making so much, and he doesn't get to touch it, except for a little bit, right? Sforza also adds on to that, and he says that what does it mean he eats in darkness? It means he lives a life where he fails to see the light of the world, meaning truth. And he says like this, I'll try to translate him. All his days he eats in darkness. And I say that this is a sick evil. Because this rich person fails to acquire the perfection of what money really can give him. And all his days he's in darkness and he eats. And he does not know which is the path to go in terms of the truth. And he has much anger because he never reaches the Mosros, for example. He doesn't reach all the, he wants more. Right, so you never reach that level of more. I mean, because there can always be more. You never get to the end. Okay. So he's telling you a principle over here. And I think he opens up the principle like you just said, Cal, in the next verse. And how does he say it? Now in 17, he says, behold, what I have seen. So now, this type of statement introduces like a conclusion that King Solomon is making about this topic. So he says, behold, I have now seen. So what is the good? See, now he's making, King Solomon is making a value judgment after he assessed all these different verses. So what is the good that I have seen? That it is pleasant that a person should eat and drink and to see the good of all of his work, all of his labor, that he labors under the sun, the few days of his life, which God has given to him as his portion. So what is the chachmah, what is the wisdom over here that King Solomon is now finally concluding with? He does go on further, more matters of money and possessions, but he's making a conclusion here about the person's own experiences.
Does it mean that God has provided everything for our needs here on earth, and if we just open up our eyes and see that everything is here, that you know, it goes along with that statement, he who is happy, who is rich is he who is happy with his lot.
Right, it's true. But show me from the words in the verse. Again, we have to be very meticulous about deriving the lesson from the verse, what the verse must say. There may be other truths.
Well, in my translation, it says, what I have seen to be good is that it is suitable to eat and drink, meaning that the food and the water, whatever we drink, is here, and it's for us to partake in, and this is sustaining our lives. And that if we can enjoy the pleasure of having these things provided for us without the need to be wanting more, then it's enough and it's good.
So what are the words that you're deriving it from? You tell me.
Let's see. Well, it's good that we are able to eat and drink, that we're able to partake of the things that are here for us and to take pleasure in the work that we do and the labor.
Okay, so what does it mean more? When he says eat and drink, I understand. Then he says the words and to see the good. What does that mean? What is the additional point there?
To see the good is that to see all that God has provided for us here during our brief span here on life, that if we really look at it, everything is here, everything that we need to sustain life.
Okay. I would just add, I hear what you're saying, I agree, that what he's talking about here is, where's the real satisfaction going to come from? Before I say anything, does anybody else have any suggestions?
I'd say it like the person is enjoying the reality of, that it is pleasurable to eat and drink, and he's not looking to some, like fantasy of what his money's going to do for him. But it is an actual pleasure that it's good to enjoy.
Okay, good.
That's the reality.
Right, so what it means, he needs to be saying that what is good, what is really the satisfaction. So he knocks out the previous case where a person is going to work so hard and they won't take anything with them. So that is rejected in terms of it being any value. Then he also shows that a person who, even on this life here, even all his days, it's like you said, Josh, before, on earth, if he doesn't partake of what he's involved in, so he's not reaching the satisfaction. And that's why he expands on that. And he says, what's really the good in 17? That the person, he eats and he drinks, and he sees the good, meaning he experiences all of his work. B'chol amalei, you see the words there right after that? With all of his labors. That means that he's trying to show you, where does the satisfaction come from? It comes from when the person does the labor, and then he satisfies himself from the labor. So I did X amount of hours today, and I didn't just store it away for a time I would never benefit from it, because that would cause frustration. So the satisfaction I can really achieve is if I labor for something, and I have an objective of how this is really going to benefit me, and then I do actually benefit from it. So now there's a peace, there's a harmony in the person, that his expectations and what he planned, the plan was involved with reality. I needed X amount of food to eat today. I worked, I caught it, I killed it, I cooked it, and I ate it. So there's a satisfaction, not just removing the hunger, but there's a satisfaction now that the sense of my labor matched up with my needs. That's what he means, I believe, when he says, and to see the good, which means he experiences the benefit with all of his labor. That means everything he labored at was for a purpose that he actually benefited from. It brought about a product that he consumed. And the converse would be true as well, that if a person labors and never gets to touch it, so that is something which really bothersome to a person. You see, he says this later on. You see in verse 6:2, he says this is the exact idea. He talks about another evil that he sees under the sun. It happens to man. And he says that God gives a person wealth and honor, and he doesn't lack anything to his soul, and anything that he desires, right? But then God does not allow him to rule over it all, to eat from it at all, to consume it. A strange person will eat it. And this is another sick evil he talks about. You see, he'll move right into that. That's the next thing. So it's continuing on this theme. But now he's laying down what the positive is. What really should the plan be? The plan should be that the person labors and enjoys the actual product of his labor. All right, and he enjoys it where? Under the sun. What does it mean? The only place he could actually use it. Because you can't use it after you're dead. And he throws in also the idea that the few days of your life, he's trying to do what now with that statement?
Is he trying to let us know that our time here on earth is brief?
Right. Why does he say that here?
For us to recognize our own mortality.
Yes.
And not to just live in a fantasy that we're going to live forever and that each moment isn't important.
Okay, and why does he say that here in this verse?
What's the relevance to this verse?
For us to just recognize that being present and living in reality instead of a fantasy.
Right. Meaning that the energy that comes from the person to hoard and to put away is because he doesn't accept the fact that he has, quote-unquote, a few days. He's just showing you, he's trying to take the wind out of your sails in terms of the wrong idea. What propels the person who's wealthy to work so much and to put it all away and not use it is because he thinks that he'll be here forever. That's why he has to bring up in this verse the right idea. But the right idea is based on the fact that you dismiss this concept of being on earth for an eternal amount of time. So it's only going to work. This suggestion that he gives is that to enjoy, eat and drink and enjoy reality and to actually partake of all your work. Let your work now be something which you utilize here and you consume the products of your work completely. You need more tomorrow, you work more tomorrow. But this type of a suggestion only works for a person that accepts that he is got a his days are numbers. So that's why he brings it into this verse. Right, you see my question and the answer?
Yes, I do. One question that I have, and it's kind of an aside to this, is there also a hint in the fact that the joy that we derive in this life is recognizing that there's labor involved, that the enjoyment is the work, and that those people that think that they want to work real hard so that their children don't have to work as hard and they save all of this for their children, that's an unnatural thing, that the work is the enjoyment, and that if you do that for your children, they lose out on that benefit?
Yeah, there is truth to that. I thought about that as we were learning these verses, that there is a sense of accomplishment, that, you know, that's something which every human being has. Although I would not say across the board that is essential, because I was just looking this morning, you know, we mentioned it before, that the Maimonides talks about in the end of the laws of Shemitah and the Jubilee. So in his Mishnah Torah, he talks about how, you know, why the tribe of Levi does not have, you know, a portion. They don't go to war and they don't have a portion in any type of conquest of land that the rest of the Jews do, because they're really set aside as being the ones that teach God's Torah to the masses. So God is their portion, and God gives them what he takes care of them. So all the gifts that are given to the temple, so that's they're not involved in acquiring land and working with their hands and starting businesses. That was not their role. That being so, you see, it wasn't necessary in terms of their own happiness. So happiness does not really, it's not 100%. For your typical person, all the rest of the tribes and the rest of the world, yes. But you can't say that that's necessary for happiness, because you see that, you know, the Levites are exactly like us. They just they come from a different ancestry. But they're the same psychologically, and yet they can be very happy without being involved in work. And you see in the future times, in the Messianic era, we're taught that the labor will be very easy. It'll come very easy, and the person will be more involved in study and teaching. So the real satisfaction the person can get is if he's involved in the world of wisdom. And you see that from those last two laws that Maimonides brings down. And remember, we also talked about, he said that doesn't apply to the Levites. We said anybody who comes into the world, right? Any human being that comes to the world, if they want to dedicate themselves to following God and to learn and to live upright, so then God will take care of them, give them a portion. It doesn't mean you abandon your attempts at work. It just means that if he's living properly, God's going to make it very easy, because this person is going to abandon the yoke of calculations that everybody else chases. And he's really, he's not so concerned about putting more and more money away and so on. I mean, it's very, you know, it's very much in line with what we're learning here, you know, in terms of this whole concept of monetary needs. But if a person really wants to set himself aside, so Maimonides, let me just get it. It's worthwhile reading again because it's very important. Hold on. I have it open. I was just looking at it earlier. And he says that why is the tribe of Levi, and this again is in the laws of Shemitah, which is the seventh, every seventh year they rest the land. Is there an English translation for that? For the word Shemitah, Doug, do you have a cover for us one?
I don't think so.
Just a sabbatical year, right?
It's translated as the Sabbath of the land.
Right, the sabbatical year, right. All right, so
yeah.
At the end of those laws here, that's in the sabbatical year and the Jubilee, which is the 50th year. So it's 13, chapter 13, laws 12 and 13. So he says as follows, that why was the tribe of Levi not entitled to an inheritance of the land of Israel and with the spoils that they get, that the rest of the Jews get with their brothers, because they've been separated to worship God and to serve, to minister before him, and to teach his ways that are upright and his statutes that are righteous to the masses. As it says in the Torah, you will teach the laws to Jacob and the Torah to Israel. Therefore, they've been separated from the way of the world. What's the way of the world they've been separated from, that they've been omitted from being involved in? They do not get included in wars like the rest of the Jews, and they do not inherit lands, and they don't merit to acquire for acquisitions with the work of their bodies. But they are the army of God. As it says, blessed is God's army. And he, blessed be he, merits to them. As it says, I am their portion and their inheritance. And then he says in Law 13, right, that and not only is the tribe of Levi alone this is applied to, but any person, from anybody who comes to the world, that his spirit moves him, and he has like a the generosity of his spirit moves him, and he understands from his knowledge to separate himself to stand before God, to minister before God, and to worship him, to know God, and to go upright as God created him, and he removes from his neck the yoke of the calculations that everybody else is involved in, of the masses, that all other men seek. So if a person does this, he is now considered holy of holies, meaning he is the highest level of human being he can be. God will be his portion and his inheritance forever and ever. That means here and in the next world. And he will merit in this world sustenance that will satisfy his needs, just like the priests and the Levites. And he says, he quotes, like the King David said, blessed be the peace be upon him. He says, God is my portion and my cup, you are my perfect lot. So he expresses that was the sentiment of King David. So you see that, this long answer to your question, Cal, but typically, accomplishment is something which is, in terms of conquest in the world and building. But perhaps we can see from this case that the Levites and then the priests, that when a person is involved in a higher level of activity of God's wisdom and all, so then that's something which it subdues that need for that conquest. And the truth is also that person knows that he's got the confidence. He knows that God's going to assist him. He had to sit back and wait for money to grow on the trees. But he's also not of the attitude where there's got to be a tremendous amount that he needs. And that's the person we're talking about over here, that a person is just putting away so much and he doesn't touch it.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
though, that the toil in that is involved in both lifestyles, if I can put it in that way, because when you're studying Torah, it isn't just a given and you get it. It's a toil because you struggle and you grapple with the ideas. It's not just out there. It's like you have to work to gain the insight from it. And so then you feel a sense of accomplishment when you can see the ideas, when you get it.
That's interesting. So that means that part of the personality is being satisfied that in the world of ideas as opposed to the world of the physical toil.
Right, but in a sense the work is similar because it's a struggle. It's a, and so that you do get that sense of accomplishment from both lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I like that. And there's no doubt that he'll enjoy in this life because the toil produces the answers to his questions, so he's sort of like consuming everything. So the products of his labor there are being completely consumed. So that whole concept of, you know, storing it away, like a guy who's working for so much money and he never touches it, that can't apply to learning. Because once you toil and you see the answer, the seeing the answer is the actual consumption. So you can't apply the mistake of putting away. It's a reality. You're seeing the idea now. That's what you want it to. You're actually living in the moment, which is what King Solomon is saying here in terms of the physical toil. You work for something that you don't use, that's going to yield frustration. And you're worried about it too. That's the that's why he's anxious. That's why a person who's wealthy is anxious about his money. That's Pirkei Avos too. If you increase your wealth, you increase your anxiety. It says in the Ethics of the Fathers. But I think that's an important lesson in 17 where he says that the person should eat and drink and see the good in all of his labor. That word all is there. It doesn't just say that you see the good in his labor, in all of his labor, meaning that whatever he toils in, if he consumes that, then he will not meet with frustration about, you know, working more for something he never got to touch. That's a bothersome notion to a person. There's not, you know, there's not something in the back of his mind that he's got to worry about maintaining and checking on the amounts in his various Swiss bank accounts. The person who works and he consumes, that's it. He has a very clean type of an approach. And there's nothing that's preoccupying him. We said last week also, he could sleep at night. And again, he has to know that his days are limited because that's the underpinning of the foolish mistake is where a person does not look at his days as being counted, as having a numbered amount of years. There's another part of things in Mishlei, in Proverbs, where he talks about that the wicked person, his evil will come like a storm suddenly. What do you mean his evil comes like a storm suddenly? Let's say his evil doesn't come until he's 70 years old. Why is that considered suddenly? Because since he never thinks that he's leaving, any time the storm comes, meaning the day of death, so then the calamity is always sudden because he never thought that it will ever end. So since he never expected this to happen to him, no matter when it comes in his life, it's a sudden thing. It's a shock. Because he really fantasized that everybody else dies but me. It's really something that people do not think about until it's too late, unfortunately. Did I mention last week the duties of the heart? He says at the end of his book, you should look at your day, like maybe today is your last day. Now, it doesn't mean to walk around morbid and to he didn't mean it that way. He meant that has to be reality. That has to be a clear reality to a person. At the same time, you see that King Solomon also said that God planted the world in people's hearts in order that they shouldn't know that. They shouldn't know the day of death. So it has to be a very, you know, it's a balancing act. The person has to be committed to the truth. He knows that, so he doesn't waste his life. He knows that there's something more in store for him. That's an eternity, and that's a world of wisdom, and he should use this time as, you know, the proving grounds, the time where he really starts to see what the real existence of man is going to be eventually. It's going to be wisdom. Because the body will leave the person at a certain point. So the person has to engage and bring himself to where he sees the enjoyment of it. If he doesn't do that here, he can't do it in the next world. So the only way a person can actually do that is if he can abandon that fantasy that he'll never have an end. That's what I believe what Duties of the Heart is saying. Because a person has to have a healthy outlook. He has to have a feeling that he's going to be here for a number of decades in order that he could build a house and a family and make, you know, inroads into establishing himself, business, and so on and so forth. Okay. And he ends off the verse by saying that he should do this, have this attitude, for the few days that God has given to him as his portion. What's that lesson? Because this is his portion, he says. What does he mean to tell us?
Is it that it's his and not another's?
I don't get these. It's a comparative statement.
It's kind of like to accept, yeah, that it's his portion.
Well, not others. I mean, it doesn't talk about others in the verse. If you're being told to just enjoy the few days you have, because this is the piece of pie that God has given you. So what type of an effect does that have on me when I hear that? This is the size of land that you're going to get from the king. And there's nothing you can do about that. What effect does that have on you? Yeah, go ahead.
It could be upset about it because you find peace isn't bigger. Or it could give you closure and understanding that, okay, this is what I got, and then you stop thinking about any other possibilities.
Okay, there's a word for that. Or a phrase for that.
Acceptance.
Right, but when he's talking about itself, it's your portion, it seems to me that he's trying to show you that something is out of your control. This is what you've been given. Meaning, you are now, you know, you take it or leave it. It's your, there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, to enjoy the few days that you have that God has given you, because this is your portion. It's talking to the part of the person that doesn't want to, like you're saying, acceptance. But acceptance is one side of the coin. A person does not want to accept something because he wants to be able to have domination. He wants to be able to control it himself. There's a lack of control that a person has to accept over here. That is something which I think King Solomon is trying to talk to. The part of the person that wants that immortality fantasy, that's based on another emotion. That emotion stands on another one. One emotion of wanting immortality is based on the feeling that the person has that I can make a change. I can do something about this. But here, King Solomon is saying, no. The reason why you have this concept and you should accept your numbered days. When you break down that fantasy of immortality, and what you have to break down as well, the immortality of the fantasy is generated from something else. The inability, like you're saying, though, to accept, which means the desire for complete control. And Mike, you're saying what he's entitled to. Okay. That's the same type of idea. But you see where it's coming from? That the immortality emotion, the desire for that, you know, to live forever in that fantasy, I'm never going to go, that's part and parcel of a more broad feeling that the person wants, he doesn't want to be controlled by anything. He wants to be completely dominating. We said this, I believe, in the verse, if I'm not mistaken, about Lashon Hara, evil speech. That one of the expressions, what King David says is that, what are the emotions that cause a person to have evil speech, to destroy others? He said, our tongues are with us. Who will rule over us? Who will rule over us? Me, Adon Lanu, King David says. Who will rule over us? The exact same emotion. See, so you see King Solomon is very cleverly at the end of this verse giving you insight to two emotional two emotions that are really propelling the person into the lifestyle where he'll keep on putting the money away and he won't touch it. Right? One, the first step is that he feels he's going to be here forever. So the first thing he says to counter that, you have a number of days of your life. But what is part of that emotion is that he can't accept that something's out of his control. So therefore he says, you have the number of days of your life which God has given you as your portion. Your portion means that you can't affect change in this area. And a wise person will look at that and he'll accept that then. The wicked person will try to fight it. They'll still try to deny it. But this can be very constructive for a person to know that he has a set amount of time. Is that clear? Does it make sense to everybody?
Yes. On the well, so for that's his portion. That's his lot. The that would be referring to like the brief span of his life, or is the that referring to his like enjoyment of pleasure and eating and drinking?
Neither one. The brief span of his life is that he says the words that the numbered days of his life. There's where he says the brief span of his life. So that's to break down the immortality fantasy, that his days are numbered. But then he also wants to show the person that this feeling of immortality really comes from another emotion, that the person wants to have complete control. He wants to be in control. So therefore he says, no, Elohim. Not the God of mercy, which is a different word. Yud Kei Vav Kei, the different spelling of God's name, refers to a different trait. Even though there's no parts to God, that this is the way the rabbis speak. But the word Elohim here, this reference to God, is talking about the God of justice, meaning the one who judges and decrees. So here he says, he brings in at the end of this verse, you should enjoy your few days which the God of justice has apportioned to you. Meaning there's something over you that is deciding something for you. It's giving you a portion. But who's giving you the portion? There's an intelligent being that's doing this. You are not in control. And the way you show that the person's not in control is that you show this is another intelligent being that dominates him.
Yeah, but when and this is how the very end of the verse says that, well, this translation says for that is his lot. As a question is, what's the that referring to exactly?
The few days.
The few days, okay.
But why do we have to say that? What I'm trying to point out is that if King Solomon is just saying that you should enjoy, eat, and drink, and see the good in all of your labor, that you labored under the sun the number of days of your life, you can stop right there. Why does it add on
that God has a portion to you. He's trying to give you another point over here. I'm trying to show you. The fact that this is God is a portion, right? Do you see that?
Yeah.
You're bringing in God. Now, so you're not in control. There's something above you. And he now gave you a portion. There's a fixed. It's fixed. Your lot is fixed. That's necessary to break a person's emotions from this area of trying to live forever. If he can accept that he has a lot, that it's a fixed number, now he could release his energies from investing into an eternity that really he doesn't have. Accept the fact that God decreed it already. It'll help you to relinquish this type of an attempt to store away for, you know, something you're never going to touch. So just labor for what you need. Enjoy all of it so there's no frustration that you work more than what you needed. There was a story of a rabbi in the Talmud that he died and he had one piece of fruit left over and he was upset about it because he worked a little bit more than what he needed. Okay, so let's see. The next verse goes more about this, and it goes into verse 18 and 19, continue on this theme. So why don't we save that for next week? But it's a continuation of this theme. This would be a problem because verse 18 seems to be just repeating. What the question will be, what is new in 18 that we didn't say up to this point? So if you want to look that over for next Sunday, that's going to be the question we'll have to address. All right, any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, so have a good week, everybody.
All right, good week.
Good week, everybody. Good month also.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.